Today on Straight Talk Africa, the death toll from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa continues to grow. The vast majority of victims are in Guinea, followed by Liberia. The World Health Organization says it is one of the most challenging outbreaks of the disease it has ever faced and could take 4 months to contain. That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, April 16th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello, Shaka.
Hello, Mariama.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we are discussing the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. Can this deadly virus be contained and kept from spreading to other parts of the region?
Well, it's a topic that received a lot of reaction from our audience, and rightly so. Coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share emails and Facebook comments. So stay tuned ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
But first, the World Health Organization is calling the Ebola outbreak in West Africa among the most challenging ever. The organization reports the virus has killed at least 120 people in Guinea and Liberia. What's most concerning is that the disease has spread from the forests of southern Guinea to its capital. VOA's Carol Pearson spoke to one of the top U.S. experts on infectious diseases about how to contain the Ebola virus and stop the outbreaks.
These doctors are suiting up to care for patients who have Ebola, one of the world's deadliest viruses. The humanitarian organization Doctors Without Borders is helping local health care workers in Guinea treat Ebola patients. The fatality rate for this particular strain that has broken out there is up to 90%. People in the region are panicked. This man says most people have never heard of the Ebola virus before and are now very afraid. The virus has spread to the capital, Conakry, from forests in the south. The World Health Organization is concerned that Ebola has broken out in a region where it had never appeared before. But Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the Infectious Diseases Division at the National Institutes of Health, says Ebola's appearance in West Africa should not come as a surprise.
It's a disease that's spread by direct contact with an infected person, but it's also spread by exposure to an infected animal like a bat. And since we know those animals are in those areas of those adjacent countries, it's not that unusual to see outbreaks in areas in southern Africa that are adjacent to each other.
Fruit bats are the primary carriers of Ebola, although the virus doesn't kill the bats. Humans get the virus from infected bats or other animals that these bats come in contact with. Dr. Fauci says people need to avoid eating bushmeat and bats when there's an outbreak of Ebola. The symptoms are very much like those of the flu: fever, weakness, muscle pain, headache, and sore throat. But that's where the comparison ends. The next stage in Ebola is vomiting, diarrhea, and in some cases, internal and external bleeding. The flu is airborne. Ebola is not.
Ebola is almost invariably spread by direct contact with bodily fluids, particularly blood and secretions, vomit, things like that, of people who are deathly ill and people are taking care of them. So it's usually family members, physicians and healthcare providers, ministers who minister to the sick and to the dead, and to morticians who take care of the bodies.
The best way to control the virus is to get people with symptoms into isolation wards. Researchers are trying to find effective medications, but at the moment, the best chances of beating the disease are to drink plenty of fluids and get treated for secondary infections such as diarrhea. A number of patients in Guinea have recovered and have been discharged from treatment centers, but that doesn't mean they are completely free of Ebola. The WHO reports that men who have recovered from the disease can still transmit the virus to sex partners for up to 7 weeks after they recover. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Thanks, Carol, for that report. Now, for more on the latest developments on Ebola outbreak in West Africa, I am joined by my colleague, Lino Modu, radio host of Voice of America's Health Chat and television health correspondent for Africa 54. Good afternoon, Lino.
Hello, Shaka.
I know that you have been very busy talking to a lot of people.
Yes.
What is the situation like right now? How does it look like in those two countries, specifically in West Africa?
Well, first of all, Shaka, health officials in Guinea just met earlier today to assess the situation. As of right now, there have been no new cases of infection reported. So this is a little bit of good news. The other good news is that as we have seen that these past few weeks, the outbreak, the infection was really spreading among our patients. Recently, the infection seems to have slowed down. So that's the good news. However, WHO officials say we have to be cautious in terms of speaking of containing the outbreak because of the incubation period of the virus that takes about 21 days. So it will be only about a month and a half before we know for sure if this outbreak has been contained.
Lino, talk to us about the reaction among the people on the ground.
As you can imagine, Shaka, and we heard in the report, it's about fear. People are very afraid about this outbreak, this disease, especially considering of the fact that, considering the speed at which people seem to die after the infection. There is also fear of eating bush meat. Official health officials in Guinea and neighboring countries have recommended that people do not eat bush meat, and it's part of some of their diets. So this also is a concern. Another concern is the fact that economically it is taking a toll on some people in the market. As you know, people sell bush meat in the market when you go to some African markets. So these vendors apparently, obviously, are not making any money right now, but it doesn't only impact the bush meat vendors. It also impacts other vendors that are in the market because people are not going to the market to shop for their food. And some people I spoke to, even in a country like Cote d'Ivoire that has not been affected yet officially, is people there say that they are resorting to grocery store to do their grocery. They are not going to the market. They are not going to open space with big crowds. So there is definitely a fear there.
Talking about a country like Cote d'Ivoire, which has not been affected as yet, and of course that happens to be your own country.
Yes.
Are there any specific steps that some of those governments in the neighborhood are taking so as to make sure that it does not spread in their own neighborhoods?
We have seen some awareness campaigns, not only in Cote d'Ivoire, but in other countries such as Ghana that has not been affected, and even countries like Mali, where there were some suspected cases, Sierra Leone as well. Awareness campaigns have been very much stepped up with radio programs, TV programs, and you will see health workers go in communities and talk to people, explain to them what is Ebola. Sometimes people have a misconception. Sometimes they think it's a bad omen or some type of spell that is put on people. So it's really about understanding this disease that officials are stressing it because it's important, according to what they're saying, that people know what it is, the step to take so they can prevent it. And even if they've been in contact with patients or they see symptoms such as fever, to report to health centers. And one of the things that people are also saying is the fact that the symptoms are very similar to malaria, for example, which is very common in Africa. So that also is scary because they don't know how to take care of their loved one if someone starts having a fever.
Well, thanks a lot, Lino, for your insight.
You're welcome.
You can get the latest on the Ebola outbreak and other health issues of interest to Africa every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC on the Voice of America's Health Chat, a live radio call-in program. You can also find Lino every Tuesday and Thursday on Voice of America's daily television magazine program, Africa 54. Check your local listings. Thanks again, Lino. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests, Dr. Dennis Carroll, the Director of Pandemic Influenza and Other Emerging Threats Unit at U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. He is responsible for providing strategic and operational leadership for the agency's programs addressing new and emerging disease threats. Dr. Carroll also serves as special representative for global health security at USAID. Well, it's a pleasure, of course, having you on the show, at least for the first time.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Robert Bernick, member of the American Red Cross's Geographic Information Systems, or GIS team, who has been making maps to assist in the Red Cross response to the Ebola outbreak. Dr. Bernice Dunn, Deputy Minister. Well, it's a pleasure, of course, to host you again on Straight Talk Africa. We also have the Liberian Deputy Minister, Medical Officer for the Ministry of Health. Dr. Dunn joins us via telephone link up from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. I gather that she's not accessible as yet. We'll probably get her a little bit later. Last but not least, Dr. Tim Jagatic of Doctors Without Borders, who is presently working 12-hour days in an isolation unit in Donkor Hospital, run by the Guinea Health Ministry. He joins us via a telephone link up from the capital, Conakry. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Doctor, from Conakry. Can you hear me, please? I'm afraid he doesn't seem to be, hearing me. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. Let's go to Conakry. Oh, he's not there as yet. Well, in the meantime, I guess let me come to the studio here. Dennis, what specific role does your agency play in this particular case?
Well, in this particular case, the Ebola outbreak, it's consistent with a partnership we've had with the World Health Organization, particularly the Africa Regional Office in Brazzaville, that has responsibility for supporting ministries of health throughout the region in addressing health issues. We've established a partnership with the Africa Regional Office that invests in building up cadres of technical experts from across Africa that can be called upon in the case of an emergency such as the Ebola outbreak. And these experts can be mobilized and sent to the countries where assistance is needed. Mm-hmm. So to date, the Africa Regional Office has deployed with our assistance 50 technical experts to the countries immediately affected by Ebola and to neighboring countries to help them put in place preparedness plans. The second area that we work with Africa Regional Office on is the deployment of critical commodities, particularly personal protective equipment that are used by the first responders and being able to address Ebola. So making sure they have the proper protective garb that will limit their exposure and limit the risk of their potential infection as well. So those equipment have been deployed, are available in these countries to be used by first responders.
Well, what sort of response are you getting so far from the people that you're working with on the ground?
Right now, we're seeing, as I think we heard from the report a moment ago, real progress in terms of responding to this particular challenge, that the situation in Guinea appears to be stabilizing. More days need to go by, but we're seeing that there are quite a bit of success in implementing what are very clear guidelines. Ebola, while it is a very frightening disease, there are very practical, measurable steps that can be taken to control it and save people's lives. And we're seeing in Guinea and elsewhere the mobilization of those activities that are proving to be highly effective.
Why is it a frightening disease? Is it because it has no vaccine? Is it because it has no cure? Is it because it has no standard treatment?
Well, certainly those are frightening, but the most frightening thing about Ebola, and particularly this strain of Ebola, Zaire Ebola, is that it has a very high mortality rate. As you mentioned earlier, 90% of those that have been infected in the past have, in fact, died. So It's not like a flu where some people, a very small percentage of people might die, very high percentage. So if you are infected with Ebola, there's very serious concerns about whether or not you'll survive that infection.
I see. Well, we have to go for a break. Before we pause for a short break, would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
The Ebola virus disease, formerly known as Ebola hemorrhagic fever, is a severe, often fatal illness in humans. It first appeared in 1976 in two simultaneous outbreaks in Nzara in Sudan and in Yambuku in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Outbreaks have a case fatality rate of up to 90% and occur primarily in remote villages in Central and West Africa near tropical rainforests. The virus is transmitted to people from wild animals and spreads in the human population through human-to-human transmission.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidui, and of course, welcome back. This is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Robert Banik, with the American Red Cross. What about your particular group? What role does it specifically play in this?
So our group has been providing mapping support to the International Federation of the Red Cross Response. Mm-hmm. Early on, after the detection of the disease, the Guinea Red Cross launched an appeal for support from the International Federation. And the Federation, in turn, reached out to the American Red Cross for mapping support for the operation. Often there's a presumption when entering a country that maps exist or that it's possible to see at a detailed level what's happening, but the maps may not exist or they may be very inaccurate and old. And what we've done is helped people to help to create those maps and provide them to the teams in the field, so that they can track their, both track the incidences of the disease, but also see at a detailed city level neighborhoods and know how to plan and conduct outreach activities.
And how accurate are those maps?
Extremely accurate. So previously, maps might have had a couple roads for a city. And what we've done is mobilized volunteers from around the world, at this point over 300, to map 9 of the cities affected by the epidemic, mm-hmm. as well as at a high level Conakry, such that we now have every individual building in many of the cities affected on the, especially in the eastern regions of this, of Guinea.
What about the rural parts of the country?
So the rural parts are more difficult because coverage is difficult. We've made the choice to focus on cities and then focus on the connections between these cities and rural parts. So while we may not have every building in a rural area, we certainly have the road network that connects them to the cities so that field responders can know how to get there and better plan and estimate their outreach needs as possible or delivery needs.
What makes the rural areas more difficult? What are some of the most challenging problems that you have run into?
We have two problems. One is access to satellite imagery. Because we're mobilizing volunteers from around the world, we're relying on satellites to show us what is there, and for people to use local knowledge to tell us what's most important and what we need to record. Without satellite imagery, some of the rural areas are less well mapped by satellites than some of the cities, and mm-hmm. hence the freely available imagery isn't sufficient to map every detail. More importantly, it's volunteer manpower. We would estimate that the work that's been done to date, in about a week's time, we managed to map work that would take an experienced mapper about a year to do. And that's really powerful, but it's not possible, but even with that amount of progress, it's not possible to map every village and every, or every small town in the region, although it's a goal that we have eventually.
One of the most sophisticated groups when it comes to mapping, I'm told, is Google, for example. Is there a way that you collaborate with them or you work with them and take advantage of their tools?
So the team at Google is fantastic, and they've really, they set the bar for what mapping means. But if you ever go on Google Maps, what you'll see is that there's no download button. And if you ever tried to print it, it's pretty hard to print, actually. We need to be able to have data that we can use raw and recycle. And so we use a program called OpenStreetMap and use volunteers through OpenStreetMap and through our partners at the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team to create that data. And then we download it ourselves to recreate the maps for our staff in the field or to add details to them that are unique to the Red Cross, mm-hmm. such as where Red Cross staff are. So OpenStreetMap is because it's an open source project and it's an open data project, we can use and reuse that data and it's not locked up in Google's database where we can never access it. With all due respect to the great work that's done by the Google team.
I see. Well, Dennis, we were talking about, of course, what your role is in this. There is this very interesting question. Why is this situation, this current situation, proving to be the most challenging Ebola crisis?
It's about time. And to be more explicit, in retrospect, what investigators are learning as they probe more deeply into the outbreak is that the Ebola events that we're looking at today largely had their beginnings 3 or 4 months ago. That, in fact, the Ebola virus has been circulating and infecting people and causing death in the rural parts of Guinea since December, if not earlier, mm-hmm. Undetected. And as we heard from an earlier report, there's frequently a misdiagnosis of the Ebola as malaria or other febrile illnesses. What was not recognized early on is that when we started seeing a much higher mortality rate associated with those presumed malaria cases, and malaria cases that also were probably exhibiting hemorrhagic bleeding from the nose and the mouth, that there wasn't a reconsideration of what those cases might be. That speaks to a core vulnerability, not just within West Africa. It's really a core vulnerability we have globally. Mm-hmm. We have excellent, excellent guidance from the World Health Organization, from our own Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, on what it is that you need to do when you are fighting a known agent. If it's Ebola, mm-hmm. there's very clear guidance. And we know that that guidance, when applied, works very well. If it's a malaria outbreak, if it's a cholera outbreak, there are clear standards for performance, roles and responsibilities. Where we find ourselves challenged, and Ebola is this event, is a very clear example, is that when there is a outbreak of an unknown origin, there's something mysterious going on, we don't have good guidance to offer to national authorities about how they manage that unknown event. And what it means is that every time there is an unknown event, national authorities are making it up as they go. They don't have clear guidance, clear playbook mm-hmm. in order to organize their response. We saw that in Uganda 3 years ago with a yellow fever outbreak, mm-hmm. With an earlier outbreak of Ebola in Uganda. 2 years before that. And it's in recognition of that lost time, which has created the movement of this virus into urban centers now. Mm-hmm. That's why this virus, the outbreak that's ongoing now, is unprecedented, because so much time elapsed from when it first began until it was finally recognized that it had spread in many different directions, creating a real challenge to bring it back in.
How does it spread? Because in the Ugandan case, there was evidence to suggest that the soldiers who had been deployed in neighboring DRC, they're the ones that in fact came with it.
Yeah. Again, as we heard from your news report earlier, it's First off, it's a virus that does not spread easily. It is a, you can think of it as a very ineffective spreader, as compared to influenza viruses.
Or tuberculosis?
Or tuberculosis. Those spread much more easily. It requires very close physical contact with fluids or the of an infected person. So we see that
more
frequently.
Like HIV?
Well, not the same way, but as we heard from your reporter, it, or as we heard from Dr. Fauci from NIAID,
right.
Is it's largely transmitted among groups of people that are responsible for caring for sick people, mortuary people responsible for handling dead bodies. That level of intimate contact is largely a prerequisite for transmission. If you don't have that kind of contact, you are not really exposed in a dangerous way.
What about people who eat monkey meat, for example?
Well, the initial, what we call the spillover event, the virus is largely living passively in wildlife animal populations, in, as Dr. Fauci pointed out, in bat populations and in some non-human primate populations.
I see.
What we know is that consumption, exposure to those animals, and consumption of those animals bring an inordinate amount of risk for the first human cases. That those are the very beginning of the movement of the virus from the animal population to people. And then we have the movement of the virus within the human population. So that initial spillover event is often associated with the consumption of, the preparation of wild animals, such as bats and non-human primates.
I see. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Noah from Tanzania. You are most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka. I am a young journalist here in the city of Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. Particularly on my daily activities, I do report on health affairs news. But my question is, as long as we have that disease now in West Africa, and when I was young, I've been hearing about such a disease in Uganda when I was young, and I've never heard about this disease here in Tanzania. My question is, what are possible ways can be used by health, people, for example, the Ministry of Health, for example, in the government of my country here in Tanzania, to make sure they will educate the people about such a disease. It is not in our country, and it is not in some in many other countries, but people migrate. Somebody can come from West Africa to East Africa, and particularly here in Tanzania. And what are the possible ways which can be used even with WHO to educate the other people about Ebola diseases and the other campaigns? And what are the measures now have been taken make sure it's not spread in many other...
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think Noah has made his point. How can you, for example, A, sensitize people about figuring out ways of making sure that that kind of a disease does not spread in their neighborhoods?
Well, I would go back to the point we were just talking about a moment ago. The first and best way of preventing the disease is to limit our encounters with wild animals such as non-human primates and with bats that may harbor that disease.
We'll come to that later after the break. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Mariama, take it away.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Meanwhile, here is our letter of the week on what needs to be done to contain the Ebola outbreak.
Mubarak Abdul Okan Atini in Uganda writes, The best advice I can give West African governments is to sensitize everyone on how to live with the infected people. The victims should be confined in one health center and only to be attended by health experts who should also be in protective gear, only worn once when attending to the patients. Any Ebola case that is realized should be reported to the concerned authority. The corpse should be buried immediately. Lastly, the government should seek advice from countries like Uganda and the DRC, since they were just recent victims of Ebola.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call directs and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. The Guinean Health Ministry says the number of deaths caused by Ebola has slowed dramatically, and the outbreak is nearly under control. The World Health Organization has labeled the outbreak as, quote, one of the most challenging, unquote, it has ever faced. As fears surrounding the deadly disease rise, the Guinean government has appealed for calm after a mob sadly attacked a center where Ebola victims are being treated. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what should West African governments do to ease the panic surrounding the deadly Ebola outbreak, especially since there is no vaccine to eradicate the disease? Well, let's begin with a comment from Nelson Mayar in Juba, South Sudan, who writes, since the virus is transmitted through many unavoidable ways, sensitization campaigns to create awareness among the local communities should be government's first priority. This will help reduce the number of new cases, and in addition, those already affected should be cared for in an isolated area. Another comment comes from Ino Magafu from Moana in Tanzania, who says, this Ebola outbreak in West Africa needs global attention and support before things get out of hand. Global support will help to calm the situation, which gets worse every day. Shaka, I believe both comments are right on the point about making sure the right measures are taken before the situation gets out of hand.
Well, Robert, what's your take on this?
Well, I thought the comment from the last from Ino was very interesting, talking about how global attention needs to be brought to bear on these issues. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, as a mapping team of global volunteers, we've tried to provide that ability for those who want to become who want to invest their time and energy in help assisting the response to do so with just clicking through clicks of a mouse. But obviously, clicking a mouse isn't all you can do. Mm-hmm. I agree that governments should be pressured to alert their citizens to the consequences of the outbreak, and that attention should be brought to bear on a global level to this issue, because it is not just confined to Guinea, but potentially a regional issue if the epidemic were to get out of hand.
How exactly do you work or assist these governments? Do they approach you?
So as a Red Cross, we work only through the local Red Cross. And now the Guinea Red Cross is a partner and auxiliary, in the technical language, to the Guinean government. And so we are assisting them and their mission to assist the Guinean government with reaching these populations. So as a mapper, my maps are used to coordinate the teams which are going to conduct these sensitization campaigns. Mm-hmm. The Guinean Red Cross is being assisted by international Red Cross teams that are providing sort of training on Ebola messaging so that these, as our viewers have rightly noted, the messages can reach the populations who are at risk.
I see. Mariama, please share some more of our audience feedback.
Well, Shaka, we'll move on to a posting from Samao Pesteria from Kumasi in Ghana, who writes, This plague has no cure, and it means you are likely to die if you have the virus. To prevent it from spreading, there should be restrictions on the movement of people across West Africa. God help us all. Quite an alarming comment, but absolutely legitimate. Let's look at another one from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour in Monrovia, Liberia, who says, the Liberian government, through the Ministry of Health, should work innovatively with WHO to contain the deadly Ebola virus. The government should also ban all flights from countries with Ebola cases, all cases of the Ebola virus. Again, Shaka, these are very legitimate comments. Banning flights would certainly have major economic consequences for countries. But if you ban flights, does it mean you'll have to have other border restrictions? In this case, people who travel by other means, such as boats, trains, buses, or cars.
Well, what about that, Dennis? I mean, we have heard about some countries supposedly closing their borders, like Senegal. How can you possibly close a border that is so porous? The last time I checked, frankly, I don't think that an Ebola needs a visa to go anywhere.
I think that's right. I mean, first off, the World Health Organization has not recommended travel restrictions. And I think that's fundamentally understanding two things. One, borders are so porous. Your ability to really regulate that population movement is not going to be effective. But then secondly, this again is a virus, while it is very frightening and people should be concerned. It is, however, because it is not so transmittable, the kind of restrictive measures that you would associate with border closings really aren't going to add much value. Again, I think having, and we heard from your viewers, effective communication, making the public aware of the risks, of the challenges, and of proper actions will go a long way towards helping people understand that their risks are very low if, in fact, they take proper precautions.
Interesting. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thanks to you, Shaka, to our guests and all our viewers and listeners on radio, TV, or web. Just a reminder, we love hearing from you, so please keep your comments coming. And if you are a new fan and don't know how to reach us, well, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comments on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
April 27 is Freedom Day in South Africa. This year marks the 20th anniversary that South Africans of all races took part in the first fully democratic elections. Where does the ruling African National Congress Party and democracy stand now in South Africa? Well, join the conversation next week right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, this is, of course, Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let's go to the lifeline of the show again, and those are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Shaka. Good evening, our guest on the program. Patrick is my name, from Nigeria here.
You're terrific, Patrick. What is your question, guest, please?
Yeah, I want to find out from our guest on the program, if a child has taken the 5 killer disease vaccination, the complete dose, the 5 killer disease, the normal dose, can such a child contact this Ebola disease if something happened in the environment there? Now, in my place here in Arochukwu, my people are used, even as I'm talking to you now, people are in different locations eating this bush meat. The bush meat, Roman call it a grass cutter. And this grass cutter is so common in my place. But one of the reports I read in one of the national dailies in Nigeria stated that this grass cutter, one can still contact such disease, this Ebola. What do you think people in my own environment should do Thank you very much, Mr. Shaka. Thank you, our guests.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Dennis, what about bushmeat? What about grasshoppers?
Well, we know that bushmeat are frequently associated with new diseases. Ebola, Marburg disease, other new emerging viral pathogens. All of these are very closely associated with wildlife and the consumption of wildlife. So it's an important ingredient in many people's dietary habits, but we have to understand that there are risks frequently associated with the capture, the slaughtering, the preparation mm-hmm. of bushmeat, all of which bring the kind of risk we're seeing play themselves out with Ebola today. So I think we need to revisit the role of bushmeat as a viable source of important protein and think about alternative strategies for how to become, to get the protein that people desire and should have.
I see. I would like to take this opportunity, by the way, to inform the audience that we expected to be joined by Dr. Bernice Dunn. I'm told that she actually just joined us because she had apparently been caught up in a meeting. Good evening, Dr. Bernice Dunn.
Good evening. How are you?
I am hugely terrific. Can you hear me loud and clear? Dr. Dunn? I'm afraid that we are experiencing some technical difficulties with Dr. Bernice Dunn. I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful hearts to forgive us for that. Let me come to you again, Dennis. The disease is characterized as an epidemic.
Yes.
What does that mean when someone talks about an epidemic, a pandemic? What is an epidemic?
Well, first off, you associate those with infectious diseases as opposed to what we might think of as chronic diseases, such as a heart ailment or diabetes. When we think of an epidemic, we're thinking about an infectious disease outbreak that is fairly geographically limited.
Mm-hmm.
A pandemic is when that infectious disease agent has spread globally. So if you remember, there was the 2009 H1N1 pandemic that pretty much captured a lot of attention, again, back in 2009. That is because that influenza virus, which emerged in Mexico, mm-hmm. within 6 to 8 weeks had spread all the way around the world. Ebola, in this case, is an epidemic because it's very geographically confined right now to a small area within West Africa.
I see. I'm told that we do have Dr. Bernice Dunn. Good evening, Dr. Dunn.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah, I should point out to the audience that you are the Deputy Minister for Health Services and the Chief Medical Officer for the Ministry of Health.
Yes.
What is the situation like in your country?
Well, so this, we have 27 cumulative suspected, probable, and confirmed cases of Ebola.
Mm-hmm.
And we have had accumulated death, suspected, probable, and confirmed 13. We have six confirmed cases. The confirmed included in the death that I mentioned 13 earlier. So we have six confirmed cases. We have 32 persons who have completed the 21 days follow-up. And we are still following up on a number of close to 50 questions currently that we are still following up on. And then we also continue to do contact tracing. The cases are located mainly in Foya in Lofa County. Of course, the last reported case from Foya was since the 4th, and it has been quiet for a while. The second county is Makidi, We had a confirmed case that died in Magidi last weekend.
I see.
Hello?
Hello?
Okay.
We have to go for a break. A reminder that you are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. Today we are discussing the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. Can this deadly virus be contained and kept from spreading to other parts of the region? To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Let's take a quick look at the signs and symptoms of the Ebola virus disease. The severe acute viral illness, often characterized by the sudden onset of fever, intense weakness, muscle pain, headache, and sore throat. This is followed by vomiting, diarrhea, rash, impaired kidney and liver function, and in some cases, both internal and external bleeding. People are infectious as long as their blood and secretions contain the virus. The Ebola virus was isolated from semen 61 days after onset of illness in a man who was infected in a laboratory. The incubation period, meaning the time interval from infection with the virus to onset of symptoms, is 2 to 21 days. No licensed vaccine for EVD is available. Several vaccines are being tested, but none are available for clinical use.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back. If you have just joined us, we are discussing the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. Can this deadly virus be contained and kept from spreading to other parts of the region? Our distinguished guests are Dr. Dennis Caro, the Director of Pandemic Influenza and Other Emerging Threats Unit at U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. He is responsible for providing strategic and operational leadership for the agency's programs addressing new and emerging disease threats. Dr. Caro also serves as Special Representative for Global Health Security at USAID. Robert Bannick is a member of the American Red Cross Geographic Information Systems, or GIS, team, who has been making maps to assist in the Red Cross response to the Ebola outbreak. Well, I have to say, gentlemen, that it is a pleasure hosting the two of you on Straight Talk Africa, at least for the first time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Shaka.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. And of course, we do have Dr. Bannis Dan, the Deputy Minister for Health Services and the Chief Medical Officer for the Ministry of Health. Dr. Dan joins us via a telephone link-up from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Well, thank you so much for getting the time to join us, Dr. Ban. Hello, Doctor. Well, let me ask you a question. What are some of the challenges that you are confronting in your efforts to take care of business? Dr. Dan? Well, it looks like she's probably not hearing me, really. She just dropped. Let's go to the telephone, you know, the essentially the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Gerard from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Okay, my name is Gerard Rutaya.
Gerard Rutaya.
From Kampala, Uganda.
Yes, sir. What is your question, Mr. Rutaya?
I have a comment. You know, we've been at least attacked by Ebola some time back in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll possibly speak from experience. The people in West Africa, it's well known that there's no vaccine for Ebola. What you need to do is to do a lot of preventive measures. I'll suggest what we really underwent here in Uganda and were able to fight it. One was really burying the people who have died from Ebola promptly and safely and very fast. Our friends in West Africa, you need to really prevent this by avoiding contact with animals, consumption of raw meat, and if you really eat meat, you need to cook it thoroughly well. Avoid direct contact or close contact with those affected patients, and then you really need to wash your hands after visiting those patients or getting any closer to them. I think you really need to just do the preventive measures since there is no vaccine. I really pray that God helps you people of West Africa. Gerard Rutaya from Kampala, Uganda.
Mr. Rutaya, you sound like a public health expert. What exactly do you do for a living?
No, I'm not a health expert. I'm from a different profession. I'm an engineer, but I'm just speaking from experience of what we went through here in Uganda.
Oh, terrific. Thank you so much for your advice and sharing your experiences. Is Dr. Dan there? She's not. I'm afraid we've been experiencing some technical difficulties regarding telephone connection between Washington and Monrovia. Let me come back to the studio here. From your experience, you've been in so many places like the DRC, you've been to Uganda, you've been all over. What are some of the lessons that you have learned, you know, through that kind of experience, especially when you have to address these types of public health issues?
Well, I think we just heard from the call-in from Uganda.
Mr. Rutaya.
There's nothing like a well-informed public. Here you had a non-public health professional who, from his own experience in Uganda, mm-hmm. clearly spoke the correct messages. And it's reflected. There was an Ebola outbreak in Uganda earlier this past year, and it was limited to one case, mm-hmm. and it was contained and isolated within just a matter of a couple of days. And it speaks to when the public is well-informed, when leadership is providing that leadership, these events can be managed very quickly, very effectively, and as your call-in suggested, they can be prevented by taking the proper personal measures.
Interesting. What about you? What else do you think that the Red Cross can do in these types of situations that you have not been able to do perhaps very well?
Well, I think the Red Cross offers a great platform for people to get involved and to get engaged. You know, this is a public health crisis, which means the public needs to be involved in it, not just in receiving the messages, but also in spreading them. You know, if I was a Ghanaian listening to this program, I would hope that I would be inspired to volunteer for my local Red Cross and to be trained on how to instruct my neighbors and those in my community on how to better prevent this disease from spreading.
Do you provide some workshops about some of those things?
That's exactly what's being done right now in Guinea to prepare the public. The Guinean Red Cross is taking the lead on disseminating these messages using their pre-existing volunteer network and accepting the contributions or the time of those who want to help get involved in their community to do the same.
Mm, very interesting. Telephone caller from Uganda, did you say? Oh, I see. Where do we go from here, Dennis?
Well, I would say the Ebola event that we're dealing with right now is one of those teachable moments. And what I mean by that is we should understand that so much time elapsed from when it originally emerged till it was actually detected. It's an opportunity to ask ourselves, why did the systems not work the way we would like them to work? Early detection, rapid response. And I would come back to the observation that national authorities have not had the benefit of good guidance on how they manage their responses when the event is an unknown event. And we've been working with WHO's regional office in Brazzaville over the last 2 years, and our colleagues at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention here at in the U.S., to develop, if you will, a playbook to help national leaders understand what they can do before an event, how they can organize their resources within the government, with among their partners, for instance, the Red Cross or USAID.
Dennis, you have a minute. This is a disease that first emerged in 1976.
Yes.
This is almost like before AIDS. How come there is not even a standard treatment for this disease? Is it because it's probably a disease of the poor?
No. Well, it's a disease that's first off very rare. So if you added up all of the cases that have occurred since 1976, you're talking at best 1,000 or a few cases. So it's dramatic, it's mm-hmm. a spectacular, and it's very frightening. But the number of people who have been infected and killed by this disease are in the very low thousands of people. So being able to develop the kind of biomedical interventions, there isn't enough sort of circulation of this virus as a public health risk to merit the billions of dollars that would be required to develop a treatment. We're much smarter if we prevent the disease. That we have control over. And we can limit its spread if it does spill over from animals into people. Again, early detection, rapid response. It's doable, it's practical. And that is the key ultimate solution to dealing not just with Ebola. Ebola is an example of the kind of emerging disease threats that we face. Learn from Ebola and apply it more broadly.
And of course, we need the maps. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Dr. Dennis Caro, the Director of Pandemic Influenza and Other Emerging Threats Unit at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, Robert Bannick, member of the American Red Cross, and last but not least, Dr. Bernice Dunn, Deputy Minister for Health Services and Chief Medical Officer for the Liberian Ministry of Health. She joined us via a telephone link-up from the Liberian capital of Monrovia. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. Also, don't forget to tune into Voice of America's Africa 54, a 30-minute daily TV magazine program that features what's trending in news, health, sports, and lifestyle. On a programming note, for the next couple of weeks, I'll be on a special assignment in the beautiful motherland of Africa. And my colleague, Vincent McCauley, will be hosting the program. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember, keep the African hopes alive. We'll be right back.